From the Land Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the fourth day of January 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom. She's of Stuart Peterson from West Bend, Wisconsin. A bit later in the program, the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility, that's the ethanol plant outside of Logansport, Indiana, will join us to take a look at the cash grain market. We'll check in on the weather forecast, too, from Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And along the way, I'll update you on all the latest news in agriculture as it comes from, well, mostly Washington, D.C., and President-elect Donald Trump right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. We're now joined by Naomi Bloom. She is with Stuart Peterson out of West Bend in Wisconsin. Thank you so much for being with us today, Naomi.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I know that our audience, probably many of them, will have seen you on Market to Market from time to time. Airs on our companion station here at about 11:30 on Sunday mornings. Can you tell me a little bit about your background and how you came to be a broker there at Stuart Peterson?
Yeah, absolutely. Growing up, I grew up in Cambridge, Wisconsin, just outside of Madison, and my dad and grandpa had a dry dog food business in our backyard. I mean, that's right, dry dog food. So we actually would buy our corn and our soybeans that we would put into our dog food from my uncles who lived just down the road, and they owned a grain elevator. They had 5 million bushel capacity and 3,000 acres. So growing up, I got to see production agriculture. I got to see how an elevator worked, and I got to see my dad as an end user buy corn and soybeans and make it into a product and sell it. And it was in 1995 and 96, I was in college studying my agriculture classes, and that was when corn first moved from $2 to $5, and my family wasn't ready for that. It was a big deal for our little family business. And so when I went back to college, I asked my college classmates, hey, what are your parents talking about at home right now? And I said, because my parents were fighting at the table, and my mom told my dad he was so dumb because he didn't buy all this corn at $2, and now here he is buying it at $5. And then my classmates joked that on the other side of it, their parents were fighting because the parent had sold their corn too soon, and now the price had rallied. And so it was just that whole experience that really got me interested in commodity marketing and how it impacts families primarily. And so, yeah, it was a natural fit then to come with Stuart Peterson as they really focus on family farming and just helping producers with their bottom line.
So I imagine the last 8 years has been pretty fun for you because it's been not quite similar, but of a much bigger proportion than what you saw at that time when you were influenced. Can you tell me a little bit about what happened in Chicago today and especially where soybeans found their strength?
Yeah, soybeans had a big day today. Yesterday, it almost looked like they were going to fall off the cliff. If you were looking at different technical aspects of soybeans, the old crop beans have been a nice uptrending line, and yesterday they finished just below support levels. And so we were all watching the weather in South America. So when we came back to trading this morning, the weather in South America is not perfect. There's some parts in Brazil that are too dry. There's some parts in Argentina that are really too wet. So it was enough to make the market say, okay, we can't jump off the cliff quite yet. We have to hang in there and see how this weather plays out in South America. And since there wasn't enough negative news to just make it crash lower today, traders came back in and said, all right, looks like we're going to be range-bound here for a few more days. So they bought on support, and now we'll probably take it a few more pennies higher up to the resistance levels until we wait for more weather to unfold in South America, and then also until we get into next week's USDA report.
So we've got those USDA reports that are the final ones for the growing season, the last crop that we just harvested. Do you expect many changes?
That report is a humdinger of a report. It's a wild one. There's so much volatility that comes out of this report. In years where reports would come out before the market would trade, we used to open up limit up or limit down from this report. And the USDA can change any aspect from acres to yield to demand, and it'll not just be what's happening in the United States but all around the world. So this report is very volatile and can be a market changer for direction of price. So you have to really be in tune with what that report says, and then especially how the market reacts after the report comes out.
And your expectations for any of the changes, do you think that they'll update total production for corn or soybeans? Both are records.
Yes, they are records. And some historical data that we have just shows that on average, they will tweak the USDA corn numbers, like change the acres, change the yield. I'm thinking we'll see a reduction on corn yield, and we'll see. Maybe there might be one more increase on soybean yield. So when you look historically, we had a gentleman in our office do the research on it, and it's kind of 50-50 as far as do they increase yield or decrease yield. So there's no concrete method to say that, yes, it's going to do this or that, but just be prepared for either scenario to happen because the market is really at a point where if we get anything friendly, the funds are short 100,000 contracts. So that would be fuel for them to cover their shorts and start to go long. And at the same time, if there's nothing over the top friendly, and if that report next week shows that we have ample supplies globally of soybeans, and if there's no perceived bad weather happening in South America, well, the funds who are long 100,000 contracts of soybeans would have reason to sell some of that off. So it's going to be a volatile one. Be ready for it.
So yield at this time, and USDA will update this on the 12th. That would be, I think, Friday of next week at current 175.3 for corn and 52.5 for soybeans. Both are records. Last year, by the way, 168.4 for corn and 48 for soybeans. Ending stocks for corn now stand at 2.4 billion bushels. For soybeans at 480 million bushels. As I've listened to you, it sounds as if you're very cautious, as most traders have been, on the idea that they're still not quite believing that soybeans are as high as they are at this time, given that 480 million bushel carryout that's still staring them in the face.
Yes, that is very true. The carryout is humongous. When you step back, though, and look at things, the stocks-to-use ratio tells a story that isn't quite as negative, and that stocks-to-use ratio is telling us that demand is growing as fast as the supply is growing. So it is such a big deal to be watching the South American crop, because half of the world's soybeans are grown now between Argentina and Brazil. And so if there's a supply hiccup from either of those two countries, the market's going to react to it quick. So the market is trading in, I think, a premium right now of making sure that the weather in South America is good. If it ends up that it's really good, then we could see prices fall lower, maybe retest the lows from last year until we then get into a fight for acres here in the United States down the road or weather issues here. So really be watching that soybean market. My fear would be that prices would fall lower if the weather is good in South America.
Do you have any advice for producers on old crop or new crop corn and soybean sales?
Well, I would get current with where you're comfortable to be current with your sales. If you have some in commercial storage, I would be thinking about selling it. You can always re-own it with a fixed risk option strategy. You can do some of those strategies for about 30 cents. That'll take you all the way out to November. Like buying the $10 call and selling the $11 call. It has a simple reownership strategy, but it's something there just in case the market should take off to the upside. But at the same time, there's potential, like I said, with this weather for South America. If it ends up being beautiful and no weather issues, prices have a bigger tendency to fall, especially with the funds being long 100,000 contracts right now. So that's something to be mindful of. And on the new crop, absolutely, you're looking at $10 beans. So you should definitely be started with at least 10% of your sales for forward contracting, maybe 20%. I would pause at that point, though, because there is potentially so much that could affect the markets later on this spring or summer in the United States, because, you know, we grow the other half of the world's soybeans. So there's a lot of potential there. But I would say primarily if you have a need to get cash flow going sooner than later, you're looking at some good opportunities right now.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to talking with you again in the future.
Great. Thank you.
That, of course, is Naomi Bloom. She is with Stuart Peterson out of West Bend, Wisconsin. In today's agricultural news, President-elect Trump has yet to pick a Secretary of Agriculture, and just when there appeared to be a leader of the pack, one who had been there in the beginning and returned just this week, Sonny Perdue, former Republican governor of Georgia. A new name has come up again. CNN has been reporting that California Lieutenant Governor Abel Maldonado now leads the pack of contenders. This is just one day after Political Playbook and Bloomberg both reported, hearing from transition sources, that, of course, Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue was the front runner. The lack of clarity follows weeks of Trump and his team publicly parading candidates into various offices to interview them for the position. John Block, former U.S. Secretary of Agriculture and a member of Trump's Ag Advisory Board, says it's very risky to think you know anything because you don't. He went on to say that Mr. Trump is likely to pick someone who will do a good job leading agriculture. Oh, let's stay in Washington, D.C., and with Donald Trump, relatively speaking. Republican Senators Steve Daines from Montana and Jeff Sessions of Alabama have replaced Senators Ben Sasse of Nebraska and Tom Tillis from North Carolina on the Senate Agriculture Committee, the Republican conference announced yesterday. Sasse and Tillis will instead serve on other committees like the Armed Services and Banking Committees. However, Sessions is President-elect Donald Trump's nominee for U.S. Attorney General. His spot on the Agriculture Committee would need to be filled by another senator if confirmed. Oh, one more Donald Trump story for the day. A poll by DTN, the Progressive Farmer, shows agriculture is building hope that the ag economy will improve under a new presidential administration. The DTN Agricultural Confidence Index jumped to a rating of 98 following the elections, from a rating of 72 recorded in August of 2016. The survey was based on responses from 500 farmers from across the United States and was compiled in early December. The poll remains below the optimism line, a rating greater than 100. Indexes below 100, which has been the case since March of 2014, indicate farmers are pessimistic about their condition, according to DTN. Farmers rated current conditions at 44.2. However, future expectations were rated at 127 by respondents. Pollster Robert Hill, creator of the index, says the only thing you can tie that positively to is the election. Farmers have a lot of hope for the new president. President-elect Donald Trump will take office, of course, later this month. The new Congress, on the other hand, is already in place in Washington, D.C. The Republican-led majority will push to roll back government regulations put in place by the Barack Obama administrations, or at least those are the expectations. While much is mundane bureaucratic language, the Waters of the U.S. rule could join the list. The WOTUS rule by the Environmental Protection Agency, US EPA, is currently blocked by the courts as challengers seek to have the rule thrown out. If Congress were to block the rule, the court cases would no longer be needed. Meanwhile, organizations included in the lawsuit against the rule have argued the case should be forwarded to the U.S. Supreme Court for consideration. For now, much of the focus in Congress, though, will be on the Midnight Rules Act and the Regulations for the Executive in Need of Scrutiny, or RAINS Act. The RAINS Act would require that before any new major regulation could take effect, the House and Senate would have to pass a resolution of approval. The Midnight Rules Act would let Congress invalidate rules in bulk that passed in the final year of a presidential term. And finally today, we'll go north of the border. Trade officials from Canada will meet with similar leadership in China next month to begin trade talks on a bilateral trade agreement. Canada's Trade Minister, Chrystia Freeland, says she is tentatively booked to have her first face-to-face discussion with China in February. The planned meeting comes after Canada's Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, announced a goal of doubling trade with the Asian nation by 2025. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Do visit our website, willag.org. There we post most of our agricultural programming. Not long after it airs on our radio stations, Commodity Week, which is recorded on Thursday afternoons, always goes up before it ever airs on a radio station. You can catch it around 5 o'clock tomorrow evening, and you can find all kinds of agricultural news and information, too. It's all at willag.org. Now, up next, you know, the outgoing Obama administration will leave in its political wake not just pending or new regulations and executive orders, but some unfinished tax policies as well. The Obama Treasury Department's pending estate tax rule to end or reduce discounts on farm asset values counted for taxation will not be finalized before President-elect Donald Trump takes office on the 20th of this month. Many in agriculture and Congress have long criticized the estate tax for making it harder to pass on farms to the next generation, even while others argue most farming operations meet the estate tax exclusion. American Farm Bureau Trade Advisor Pat Wolf has these thoughts.
The administration also ended the year without issuing the final regs on the way some assets are valued for estate tax purposes. We're hoping that with the new administration that proposal will be withdrawn, and that would be a good end to that scare.
Also unsettled, how Congress will resolve so-called step-up basis that limits capital gains tax to the gain between the time of death, not the original purchase, and the time of sale.
We don't know how Congress will deal with continuing the stepped-up basis and whether or not they'll impose a new capital gains tax at death. Those are big questions. How that comes out is important for farmers and ranchers.
However, Wolf says some tax cuts and regulatory relief are expected. Agriculture and other business sectors may also be spared the uncertainty of perennial end-of-the-year fights over tax extensions. It could be a year of significant changes for producers, even as they continue to struggle with big surpluses and low commodity prices. Comprehensive tax and regulatory reform will be on the table for discussion. It will not change the weather, but it could very well change the business climate. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Wednesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Drew Lerner joins us on this fourth day of January. Hey, Drew, thanks so much. I hope you're looking forward to the whole of 2017.
Absolutely, I am. The weather is ever-changing, so who knows what the old ball game is going to present this year.
Are there any interesting events we should be aware of in South America?
Well, at the moment, we are dealing with some interesting weather in Argentina in particular. You know, we had flooding in late October, caused some delays in the planting that occurred in Argentina. Everyone was worried we weren't going to get the crop in. Then all of a sudden it went dry for 3 weeks, and we got rid of all the surplus moisture, and then it got too dry, and everybody was starting to worry again that the crop was going to fail because it wasn't raining. Then in the last 10 days, we've gone back the other way, and now we've got too much moisture, and it's flooding again. So Argentina, even though their weather has never been so extreme that the crops have failed, it certainly hasn't had ideal weather. And the bottom line is that they are losing some yield potential. It is too wet right now in Argentina. It will stay that way for another 10 days. And then we're talking about the heart of corn and soybean country there. So it will be interesting to see how they come out of this in the end. I do think it will get a little better across Argentina as we get towards mid-month. Now, in Brazil, Brazil's weather kind of flip-flopped around a little bit, too, when Argentina switched gears here recently. Now we've got some dryness going on in northeastern Brazil in the states of Bahia and northern portions of Minas Gerais and a couple of other spots, while the rest of the country is still in pretty good shape, and the majority of the corn and soybeans that are produced in Brazil are actually in the center west and southern portions of the country. So we really haven't hurt Brazil very much, although certainly a lot of press is being given to the dryness in the northeast. But when you step back and look at the big picture, it's still going to be a big crop there.
And looking forward, do you see many changes in their weather conditions over the next 2 weeks?
I think for the most part, it's going to be status quo for the next week to 10 days. After that, we may bring some rain back to the northeast part of Brazil and may start to dry down some of the southern areas just a tad. but I am not looking for a major problem in any of the major crop areas in Brazil, at least not through the majority of January.
Here in the United States, it's January, and lo and behold, it's cold.
Yes, it is. This weekend, it will be one of the colder weeks. We do expect to see temperatures dropping down into the single digits through a big part of the Midwest, the Central Plains. We'll see sub-zero readings as far south as Colorado again and parts of western Nebraska. Snow cover is going to be somewhat questionable in hard red winter wheat country, but once again, I think we'll have just enough snow out there to cover the crown of those plants and to keep them from going under with a winter kill situation. I don't think that will happen. Most of the soft wheat in the lower Midwest isn't going to be cold enough to cause any permanent damage, so we're okay there. We're actually a little bit concerned about Florida because it may get cold enough for some freezes to work their way down into northern citrus country early next week. And at the moment, I'm not ready to jump all over that. I don't think it's going to turn out to be a damaging event, but certainly it's going to be nippy in Florida. First time this year, it's been really very warm there for the last few months.
Danny Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.